Hello, I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
It's living the simplicity of the gospel according to our own state in life, but with an intentional pro-life ministry.
Lives of prayer and service, living testimonies of the gospel.
Walking them out of a place of fear to a place of freedom is our biggest work.
Women religious reflect the love and mercy of Jesus and promote a culture of life.
My secret, my great secret. I pray the rosary every day for everyone.
Understood.
This special episode brings you the joy, care, and servant leadership of women in our Catholic Church.
Seven help centers for pregnant women that are in our diocese.
We love to share that there is healing after abortion.
They become part of our family while still being a part of their religious community wherever that's possible.
Honoring the dignity of the human person, religious sisters around the world provide care and support for mothers in crisis pregnancies, the elderly, the sick, and retired religious. Welcome to a special episode dedicated to women religious and Catholic lay women who are protecting life in different ways. These women have a special place in our church, reflecting the virtues of the Blessed Mother and the work of Christ in their charisms. We begin our program with an emerging Catholic ecclesial family of consecrated and lay persons just outside of Oklahoma City. The Gospel of Life Disciples and Dwellings provide care for those at the end of their life's journey. They support the elderly or terminally ill that lack resources to care for themselves. The ministry is donation and volunteer-based. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration on Aging says the average 65-year-old has an almost 70% chance of needing some type of long-term care, whether that's assisted living or a nursing home. The median cost of a nursing home is more than $7,000 a month for a semi-private room and upwards of $9,000 for a private room, according to Genworth Financial. Some of the most expensive places can cost more than $15,000 a month in cities like San Jose, California. The reality is that many Americans simply can't afford that. And if they don't have family or friends to care for them, they can be in a dire situation. But there are resources and ministries dedicated to making sure our brothers and sisters' needs are met, many of them inspired by faith. Sister Maria of the Trinity has been working with the sick and the elderly and dying for years. She joins us now to discuss the work she's doing in Moore, Oklahoma. Welcome to the program. You started an ecclesial family. Tell us what that is and how it's different from an order.
Well, and as you mentioned, Monsi, it's an emerging reality. We start our first year formation this coming fall, and it really takes St. Francis's three orders, the first order, the friars, the second order, the contemplative poor clares, and the third order lay, and under the third order rule, the third order regular rule, and it'll be a family where there's a branch for consecrated, like myself, a branch for families and lay, and a branch for clergy, seminarians, deacons, and priests. So we have members interested in each branch that will begin a common year formation this coming fall. And we're excited about that. And we're certainly under the patronage of our Lord in his divine mercy and Our Lady of Guadalupe, patroness of life, and then our very own hometown hero, Blessed Stanley Rother. So it's living the simplicity of the gospel according to our own state in life, but with an intentional pro-life ministry based on John Paul II's encyclical, The Gospel of Life, and just based on the old age-old teaching of the church and respecting every human person from womb to tomb. And the Lord has particularly called us as the Gospel of Life disciples to walk with persons as they end this life's journey. And we do that as a community, and a spirituality of communion, respecting each one's gifts and commitments. And it's really been beautiful to see this unfold according to God's design. We have a home also in the Diocese of Dallas, and we're in May beginning a foundation in Guatemala.
Wow. So,
Thank you for your prayers.
Of course. And it's really beautiful to see all of those different branches, like you said, come together. Unlike other palliative care centers that rely on Medicare funds, yours doesn't. What is your financial model to support those in need, especially with so many people involved?
Right. Well, it's 100% trust in God. We rely on His providence and the goodwill that really is there. You know, we appreciate you sharing good news with others, but there's really a lot of goodness alive and well in the human heart. And so right now, as we speak, there's two women that came in to make lunch for the home today. And there's another one that's sitting with a 98-year-old woman who's close to dying. And so it really is each one doing according to what God's put on their heart and given them the possibilities so that we're able to free of charge, without relying on government funding, take care of our brothers and sisters as part of our own family, because they are our brothers and sisters in Christ, and particularly with the possibility to take those that aren't funded through Medicare and to be able to provide them a very beautiful and dignified place to be loved, to be known, and to be accompanied at the end of this life's journey. So if they know Jesus, they get extra of that. And if they don't, they can maybe get a glimpse through the service and love of those that are with them day in, day out, helping them in their vulnerability, maybe get an inkling of that love that awaits them.
That's really beautiful, that description of the way that everyone comes together. And it's not just financial providence, but also the providence of the body, the people who can come and be there with you.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And also, there's another man who just drove by and saw this big house that was donated to us. And he said, I do power washing. And I know he's struggling to get his company going, but he said, God asked me, a Baptist, to come power wash your house for you. And
wow. And
I just pray blessings on him. So it really is. It's really beautiful. And it's a sheer miracle that the ministry's up and going. And it's just one day at a time by his providence.
So
but it's according to his plan. Yeah.
Of course. And how many people does your ecclesial family care for right now? You mentioned a couple of them, but is there a specific number that you're working with?
Well, we kind of technically in Texas, we have three, because that's what the state law is. Without a license, you can welcome three people. And then, of course, sometimes we have guests that come in and according to the needs. And then here in Oklahoma right now, we have six in the home. Mm. And there's a homeless man who'll be coming probably this weekend who is in stage cancer. Mm. And so we try to keep it 5 to 7 just to be able to give that personal time and attention to each one. And then as long as they're able to gather around the table together for meals, to share chores, to pray together, it's really a family life that we want to give them a taste of before they are called home to God.
Of course, to be with their eternal family. But now you described other ways that people came into this ministry, but what about your heart? How were you called into this type of work?
Well, I truly feel like the Lord, for a time such as this, asked me to telescope my nursing in geriatrics, which has been beautiful and a great experience, to that special time of vulnerability and sacredness, which is the last days and months and weeks of someone's life, because our terminally ill, vulnerable, and elderly are more and more at risk, even especially more so since COVID, of being neglected or snuffed out. And we want to avoid any of the trend towards a stealth euthanasia or promotion of assisted suicide, where they sort of feel guilty to be with us, mm-hmm. and that they're a burden. And so the Lord just really put a call on my heart to focus on this final sacred time of life to assist the dying.
That does need that
special
care. And then
we found when they receive that love, they end up doing a lot more living. So sometimes the prognoses aren't really what they thought, but it's all in God's time. And I think that's really the good fight we need to continue today, is to say that God is sovereign. He's the author of life, and it's in His timing we come into this world, and it's in His timing we should leave this world. And so we have to be discerning and very vigilant that it's not usurped by human means.
Absolutely. Well, we're grateful for your ministry and for your courage and accompaniment at the end of life. Thank you so much, sister.
Thank you, Monse, and God bless you for all your pro-life work.
God bless you. You can find out more about this beautiful ministry by visiting gospeloflifedisciples.org. In New York, a state with some of the most lenient abortion laws, a young order of religious sisters focuses on promoting a culture of life. The Sisters of Life gave us a behind-the-scenes look at their daily mission to save the lives of the unborn.
The Sisters of Life is a relatively young order, just 30 years old this year. But despite being in its infancy, it's growing quickly. Pope John Paul II diagnosed our growing societal problem. He said, "We live in a culture of death." And John Cardinal O'Connor in New York took that message to heart and inspired a group of women religious to counter that prognosis. The sisters' mission? Promoting a culture of life, helping women in all stages of their lives.
Everyone starts with prayers.
Prayer is our first work, and that is what it flows into our other works.
So we have a couple of hours of prayer in the morning, including Mass and Holy Hour.
Work begins after breakfast.
It sounds like you are far along. You are going to have a little girl.
Our time of calling women back who called yesterday. Maybe there'll be new calls.
The stuff that might be holding you back or holding you like.
We'll have women come in. We'll have what we call turnarounds, women who've been at a clinic but have turned around and come to us. We'll be meeting with them. It can be hours long. It can be usually a new call is at least 45 minutes. And just walking them out of a place of fear to a place of freedom is our biggest work. We also have a lot of extraordinary activities, which will be things like a baby shower. Like I mentioned, a cooking class. Earlier today you saw we were painting something with the women. It's just a way to make them feel part of a family.
I know that you also have healing missions. It's not just about walking with someone who is in the middle of making the decision.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So, yeah, because maternity is forever, that's a big principle that we live by, that a woman will feel a huge loss after her baby has been, you know, that she has lost her baby to abortion. And so when she kind of comes to understand that, she will wrestle with that and need to walk towards healing. And I think that's a big grace that we love to share. You know, we love to share that there is healing after abortion. There is hope. We love to kind of like push aside the veil that covers the mercy of God and be like, look at God's mercy. You know, it's like a lighthouse. And so many of the women that we've served in the past who now, you know, they've been able to trust God through the hardship of coming back to him after suffering an abortion. And she becomes this big lighthouse of knowing that there's a way through the pain. And so just to, they're the most gorgeous women because they know that there's been suffering, but they also know the absolute truth in trusting God through this. The Lord has only great invitations to holiness, to happiness, and he desires that, and he's pursuing her, but he's not going to force. The Lord will never force, so we need to meet him halfway.
Promoting the dignity of all women and serving the whole woman through prayer. You can see more of our coverage on the Sisters of Life on the Pro-Life Weekly social media profiles. Be sure to follow and like us on X, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also see segments of our show and our entire broadcast on our YouTube channel. Vladivostok, Russia. It's home to one of the only Catholic religious orders for women in the entire country. Founded in 2005, the Sisters in Jesus the Lord have a special calling to serve the people of Russia, where Catholics make up 0.1% of the vast country's population. While there have been some efforts from lawmakers to curb abortion in Russia, right now it is still legal to end unborn lives. In this climate, the sisters have become a vital witness to the dignity of life. Mother Maria Stella Whittier is the prioress of this order, and she recently sat down with me to discuss the state of Russian women and abortion there. Here's what she had to say.
Now, I see that you're wearing a pin, the two baby feet. It does say something about your vocation and what you believe and what you do for life. How is that something that you do in Russia? How do you do that ministry there?
Oh, thank you. Yes, we've been so devoted to any pro-life work, really, from the beginning. But something, a way that we live this out in Russia, especially, is through Rachel's Vineyard retreats for healing after abortion. And it's been so beautiful to see the healing that can be found for both men and women. And these retreats now are expanding all across Russia. They used to only be in Vladivostok and Magadan, but there was a Catholic psychologist visiting Vladivostok several years ago. Her mother lives in that area. She heard me give an announcement about the upcoming retreat, and she said, "Can I please come?" She loved it. She said, "It's so gentle, it's so beautiful, so healing." She said, "I want to bring this everywhere." And so through her, we've brought retreats now across Russia. So there's a local team now in Irkutsk and Novosibirsk and Moscow, St. Petersburg. They've had them near Mongolia in Ulan-Ude, and even Belarus, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan.
We know that in the U.S., the pressure to abort is very, very heavy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these women come with wounds where they're more psychological than anything else. They feel uncertain, they're insecure, they don't think that they can do this, they don't think they're fit to be mothers. Are the women that you are serving in Russia coming with those same concerns or those same wounds?
Yes, and their wounds are even deeper in that abortion was legalized in the early 1920s in Soviet Russia. And so most women, even their grandmothers, had abortions. Their grandmothers, their mothers, their aunts. And so there can be tremendous pressure because one of the possible side effects, one of the possible wounds is, if you haven't realized what you've been through, is thinking that's the best thing for someone else. You know, and so there are many, many cases where, you know, someone found out she's expecting, she maybe has one child, and everyone around her says, "Well, that's enough. You know, you don't have more room in your apartment. You can't get more space. Don't even think about it." And so she can be under tremendous pressure. And another beautiful thing that Father Myron Effing was able to start, our pastor, he started 7 help centers for pregnant women that are in our diocese. So we're able to help financially support one of them right now. And the most recent one was just opened in an AIDS clinic in Vladivostok. Wow. So they're finding expectant mothers with AIDS or HIV, and they're able to help them so that in most cases their children will not have the same disease.
That's heroic work.
Yes.
Heroic work.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, dignity with aging for our retired religious. Sister Constance Veit of Little Sisters of the Poor shares the graces and challenges of her ministry. Plus, we traveled to Brazil to meet one of the oldest habited nuns in the world. She shares her secret to a long and joyous life when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back to this special episode of Pro-Life Weekly, looking at the lives of women religious and their dedication to living out the gospel of life. We continue our episode now with a journey to the south of Brazil, where Sister Ina of the Society of Teresa of Jesus is celebrating 115 years of life.
My secret, my great secret, I pray the rosary every day for everyone. Sharing her secret to a long life, Sister Ina Canavarro Lucas is the oldest nun in the world at 115 years young. A religious of the Society of Teresa of Jesus since she was 19, she's also the oldest person in Brazil and Latin America. Sister Ina currently lives in Porto Alegre in Rio Grande do Sul state in Santo Enrique de Osso home, adjacent to the provincial house of the Teresian Sisters of Brazil, the community she entered in 1927.
The home's coordinator and childhood friend of Sister Ina says that the other secret of the nun's long life is that she's always focused on others, not on herself.
Such a resilient person. She doesn't demand anything. She is grateful for everything. She thinks everything is fine. She has enormous admiration for the congregation, for the order, and interest. She prays for everyone. She cares about everyone.
Ela reza por todo mundo, se preocupa com todas.
The sixth of seven siblings, Sister Ina was born on May 27, 1908. Over more than a century, she has experienced many changes in the world and in the church. She's lived through two world wars and has seen 10 pontiffs. The year she was born, the Pope was Saint Pius X. She's also one of the few nuns in her congregation who still wears her habit. According to the sisters of her community, since the Second Vatican Council in the mid-60s, wearing the habit has been optional. A woman of many passions, Sister Ina believes in the power of music and helped create a famous marching band in Uruguay. And while now she mostly sings to Our Lady, she notes that founding the marching band at Santa Teresa School in Santana do Livramento is a milestone in her life.
Sister Ina is our paradigm in terms of religiosity, faith, goodwill, a kind and good-humored person. She has been like that all her life. Now, the poor thing is declining with age, but God will help her and she will reach 116, 117. Let's go to 120, God willing.
Her nephew, Kleber Canavaro, is 83 years old and visits her frequently. When asked about the message she would like to leave young people, she said, love all the people in the whole world. Jokingly, a sister asked her who she believes is the most beautiful person, and she responded, beautiful? Our Lord. Sister Ina was a teacher all her life. She taught Portuguese, mathematics, science, history, art, and religion in Teresian schools. Many of the sisters who live in the same convent today were students of Sister Ina. They tell stories about how she helped them discover their vocations. This is the case for Sister Velmira Piotrowski, 83, who joined the Teresian sisters after seeing Ina. Today, she is the nurse responsible for taking care of her.
I feel very happy, very grateful to God that she was the one who guided me along this path, and now I can be useful to her, help her in those moments when she needs me.
En esos momentos que pues me necesita.
At the Teresian convent in Brazil, in addition to Sister Ina, there are many other sisters older than 80 who have dedicated their lives to God through education and youth ministry. Support and health care for our retired religious is vital. It comes in many different forms. Sister Constance Veit of the Little Sisters of the Poor has worked in this field all of her career as a nun. She spoke with me about her vocation to honor the dignity of life for the aging. The mission of the Little Sisters is known to many of us, caring for the elderly, poor, and dying. How often are those women and men religious?
Well, first of all, thanks, Monsi. It's great to be with you. We have always welcomed a certain number of elderly priests into our home all over the world, and these tend to be diocesan priests, but once in a while, they might be religious priests or religious brothers. It's a little bit more unusual to have women religious because more women religious communities can take care of their own at home, but every once in a while, that does happen. In our home in Washington, we have a half a dozen men between priests and religious brothers who are part of our community.
And what does that look like? Do they come and celebrate the sacraments? Are they cared for 24/7 without them being able to partake in the rest of community life?
Well, they become part of our family while still being a part of their religious community wherever that's possible. The men that we currently have are all up and about during the day, so they're all at Mass. They can celebrate Mass with our chaplain. A couple of them are able to celebrate Mass on their own if we need an extra Mass. But these men participate in activities with the other residents as much as they wish to. They share their meals with the other residents, and then they have a lot of follow their own interests, prayer life, reading, various things, visitors. So it's really up to them how they fill their days. If they would be more infirm, then, you know, we would take a more active part in making sure that they had meaningful pursuits during the day.
And you're the youngest of your community here in D.C. Is the aging community within the Little Sisters themselves a challenge that you're facing?
Yes, definitely. Our communities around the world are aging. And, you know, I never thought that at my age, which I won't disclose, that I would be the youngest member of community. But that's how it is. So, sure, it has an effect on daily life in our communities. Yeah.
Well, you're a young lady. So quickly, how has the Holy Father's call to engage the elderly given you hope?
Well, it gives me hope that someone, I guess I could say as high placed as the Pope himself, has this so much at heart, and he really does. He talks about this concern all the time. And I just wish that there was a way that it would trickle down a bit more or a bit more quickly. Perhaps you cover it a lot on your program, which I really appreciate. But for all of us in the church family to realize the needs of the elderly and also the very valuable gifts that they still have to offer so that they would be more incorporated into the life of the church.
Well, we're grateful for your vocation and for the gift that you are to the elderly, poor and dying. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Monsi.
That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. If you're interested in more pro-life news from our nation and world, go to EWTN.com/pro-life and sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.